So, good afternoon, wonderful people. Thank you so much for coming. We appreciate you. Thank you for taking our materials. And if you want more, there's more at the MAC table as well. I'm Mary Helen Deagle. I'm the FAME program manager for the Michigan Department of Education's FAME program, which is Formative Assessment for Michigan Educators. Myself, I've been in education for 30 years. I was primarily a secondary teacher with social studies in ELA, and I was a FAME coach as a classroom teacher. And then in time became a regional lead who was essentially a mentor for the educators across the state. And now I'm the program manager working at Michigan Department of Education. And with me today, I have Christy Walters.
Hi, I'm Christy Walters. I work at Corona Public Schools. I'm on the leadership team for FAME. At Corona Public Schools, I am a special education coordinator and a FAME coach. Are any of you in here FAME coaches? You're just here to learn about it. So I'm in the thick of it this year. I've got five teams. If you have questions about actually having a team, we're going to talk more about what the FAME program is and what it will offer to you. But I do have teams if you have questions about that. And we meet a couple of times a month, and that's not required, but I could share with you about that as well. So
thank you.
You're welcome.
So our agenda today is really to kind of do the what, why, and how. And kind of the two how-hows. So what is formative assessment? Why is formative assessment the foundational piece for teaching? Really, it's best practices. And then how might it be applied in any context? And then how might FAME, our program, support you as educators in your context? And then have an opportunity to organize and integrate and go, okay, what might be our next steps? And with whom do we need to speak in order for this to become a reality? So our objectives: to understand the characteristics of the formative assessment process, understand why formative assessment is foundational to teaching and student learning, understand how formative assessment can be embedded to improve student learning, and to understand how FAME may support you and your colleagues and students. So think about the sheer brilliance of the perfection of growing something really beautiful. Think about the pH balance, what has to happen with the soil, what has to happen with the water absorption. There are so many factors that have to be considered in it. And if something is not doing well, it's not growing well, then we change those conditions, right? So why don't we do this with students universally? Think about the fact that we have the resources if we distribute them intelligently and use them wisely. We need to think about how do we get to the root of the issues that can seem to choke out the possibilities of making real sustainable change for every kid, regardless of their growing conditions. Because as educators, we know that we're getting kids from all different backgrounds and all different levels of understanding and all different ways of learning. So let's pool our resources together and make the conditions accessible to everybody. We also know that the formative assessment process, when done well, is excellent tier one instruction. And this is something that these efforts apply to universally across all students to create this optimal learning opportunity, and it works. And this is one of the things where I think the benefit of both Christy and I presenting today is that we've been with students who've had so many different learning styles and so many different levels of success. And we know, both of us, are testaments to knowing that this actually works. Otherwise, neither one of us would be doing this. And I think both of us are really passionate about this work because we've seen it change kids' lives. And that's something where, if that weren't true, then I wouldn't really be talking about it. So if thinking about this, how do teachers get students to invest in their learning? Well, we have to transform that resistant student to one who's going to engage and possibly even get excited about learning. And this is something where changing that kid's mindset is a real critical piece to this. And one of these things, while it can be really kind of difficult, is really important. And I want to tell you the story about Tim. So I was a secondary teacher. Tim was entering into his 10th grade year, so first semester. He was the kid who I knew his name within the first 5 minutes of class. Right? You know which kid I'm talking about. He was tall, charismatic, and he was highly effective in being the leader of the class clowns, because at least he was good at something. And yet, Tim had an IEP and was reading below a third grade reading level in 10th grade. And his grades were failing across the board. And he was really frustrated. But it's a soul lot, it's a whole lot more having social capital if you can make people laugh rather than have people think that you don't know what you're talking about and you're dumb. So on top of that, Tim had some absenteeism issues. So we had I had him for 20 weeks minus a couple of weeks because of absenteeism. And yet, I had Tim change that mindset because all of a sudden we created a trusting and respectful relationship and an environment and a structure for him to realize that maybe he actually had a chance. And it got to the point where we had Tim, who previously didn't even write sentences or paragraphs, coming up to me going, "Hey, Ms. Deagle, I know this doesn't count for points, but can you take a look at my paragraph? Because in here, this is what I did for my topic sentence, and this is how I was going to actually do the example, and I'm not really sure about this part, but I'm really strong about this part." And he's just having that metacognition and talking about his own writing without me even saying a word. All I had to say was, "Yeah, Tim, I'll take a look at your writing." And already he was thinking about how he was doing his own self-improvement. And he was already thinking about, well, this is where I am right now, and this is where I want to go with this writing, and this is my next step. Well, what just happened? Tim learned how to use the formative assessment process, which are five basic components and principles, and applied it to his own life. That same kid came to me the next semester. I didn't have him the second semester. But he came to me really excited, going, "Hey, take a look at my progress report." And all of a sudden, he was going from all E's to getting things like B's and C's, and even had a legitimate A in a class that normally he would have failed. Tim ended up going from a kid who was projected to either go on to the prison route or 6 feet under route to a kid who is now on track to become a master plumber. He graduated in the spring of 2024. And it was one of those things where that's what I'm talking about when this is a huge game changer. If we can reach kids like Tim, imagine the kids who actually have a lot of support, what's going to happen with them? So this is something where when we're talking about changing kids' mindset, it's really critical. One of this is that the formative assessment done well gives kids hope. And hope is a cognitive behavioral process. It's not a feeling or emotion. And it's something where it's the, I can do this, and I know my next steps. And that's exactly what Tim started to experience. To the point where Tim, who knew the assistant principals all really, really well, it got to the point where I observed him telling his buddies, "Wait, shh, I need to know this. Like, we need to know this. I have to focus on this right now because this is going to be so that we're ready for tomorrow." It was one of those where you're like, "I did not plant that kid in there, but oh my gosh, could I have recorded you and can you re-say that again?" Well, what happened to all the behavioral issues? They disappeared. And instead of trying to be the class clown, now Tim was starting to invest in his own learning. And Tim was starting to believe that maybe he actually had a chance and take that responsibility for his life and that we could actually be co-partners in helping him in that learning journey. So that's a little bit of when we talk about this action-oriented and learned cognitive process rather than just this emotion, this goes really, really well with formative assessment because this is ultimately what we're giving our kids. We know that from the OECD, this was back in one of their findings, where they said schools are facing increasing demands to prepare students for rapid economic, environmental, and social changes, for technologies that have not yet been invented, and to solve social problems that have not yet been anticipated. And education can equip learners with the agency, the competencies, and the sense of purpose to shape their own lives and contribute to the lives of others. Children entering the school in 2018 will be young adults in 2030, so change is imminent. Well, basically, what are we doing? We're preparing kids for jobs that don't even exist yet. So how do we do that? Well, we need to develop their metacognition and their creativity and their critical thinking and their analysis and their disciplinary literacy and their communication skills and their self-directedness and their curiosity, their efficacy, and all these different skill sets that CEOs are telling us this is what we're looking for in our workforce. And having it at, again, shifting that mindset. what's the purpose of learning? What's the purpose of education? And how can we set our kids up in ways where they can build that content and skill set knowledge to be able to enter into the workforce? Because at some point, they're going to be taking care of us. And they're going to have to start solving some of these real issues that we're dealing with. So building student agency is important in this. So how does engaging in this process lead to a positive and inclusive culture for learning and really moving these students from earners, grade grubbers, what's my grade for this, how many points do I get for this, which actually doesn't mean a whole lot other than maybe you don't get in trouble with your parents, to learners going, how do I best learn? How do I develop these skills and know how to apply them in the real world context, in any kind of context? So now we kind of get into what is the formative assessment process. This is an analogy that I've used with my students as well as my parents and guardians and my administrators and colleagues who might not have quite understood formative assessment the way I understood, which is our definition is based more on the research from people on the international and national levels. So just by a show of hands, how many of you have ever done any kind of performance, whether that's athletics or music or dance or art or debate or any kind of thing that you had to do some sort of performance? Okay. I'm going to use volleyball as an example because for years I was a volleyball coach. If on the very, very first day of training, on the first day of practice, I told my athletes, whatever you do in practice is going to go on your permanent win-loss record, would we do very well? No. But would I still expect my athletes to come to practice and learn the offense and the defense and how to communicate with me as the coach, how to communicate with their team members, how to self-reflect so they can improve on their own technique, how to actually have the resilience and stamina to be able to keep moving even when we face challenges? Would I expect them to do all of those things? And hopefully in a positive way with good sportsmanship, yes. Once we get to that actual game day, are we going to have a better chance at winning? Absolutely. Now in sports, once you finish that game, it's either win, loss, or tie. Can you change the outcome? No. This is where my classroom was a little bit different. I told the kids, look, whatever we do, there's a purpose for everything that we do in here. It's very, very intentional. So I was giving them the what, why, and how, both vertically as well as horizontally, to tap into their experiences and their funds of knowledge and what they were already knowing, their prior knowledge. And so they knew, okay, well, every day we're going to be working on something that's going to be end up leading us to this actual game day. And if I do all of the practice, and on the game day, whether that's a test or a written response or a project or a presentation, whatever it might be, that's going to get graded, if I don't show the level of proficiency that I had hoped, I can redo it with some relearning and reteaching and then try that again. And that was something where I found kids like Tim going, well, first of all, if I'm trying really hard the first time, I don't have to worry about the retakes. But, and at the same time, it takes a little bit of that pressure off. And all of a sudden, I started seeing kids like Tim going, wait a minute, I have a small win. And I can start building on that small win and maybe get another small win. And all of a sudden, what happened in my life, or what happened in Tim's life, was that he broke the losing streak. And he started getting on winning streaks. And all of a sudden, he started to build his confidence. And he started to build his willingness to engage, even though sometimes the topics might not necessarily be the most important or the most that resonated most with him. We would find ways to tap into what would be key to get him going. So really, what is formative assessment? Well, this is a research-based definition. This is from the CCSSO. The event was in 2017, and then it was actually published in 2018. So the formative assessment is a planned ongoing process used by all students and teachers during learning and teaching to elicit and use evidence of learning to improve student understanding of intended disciplinary learning outcomes and support students to become more self-directed learners. We as teachers still need to have that strong disciplinary action, that knowledge and ability to know what it is that we're supposed to be teaching. And also a big part of this is teaching the kids this process so they can start taking ownership of their actual learning. So at FAME, we have this infographic, and we base it off of kind of the three questions from Getwalls and Statler, where are we going, what does the student understand now, and how do we get to that learning target? As a teacher, I would have a pretty good idea of where I am in this process based on those three questions. And this was particularly helpful when talking to newer teachers for the process. And we also color coordinated this, so we go, well, notice that this is a circle, very much like the analog clock, where it's not a one-done event. This is something that's continually happening in real time while the kids are learning and exploring and experiencing and maybe making mistakes and learning from their mistakes during that learning process. And we know that for that first question, where are we going, we're talking about planning and learning target use. And planning is beyond actual lesson plans. It's really thinking and being intentional about where might I use different elements of formative assessment? What types of questions might I ask the students? If the students are at a really high level in understanding this, what might be my next step? If I have students who are not really understanding it, what might be my next step? And really being intentional with that planning so that you're prepared for it. Now, this is a little bit easier if you've been able to actually teach that same subject more than once. And even if you're teaching it for the first time, you can start developing that database for yourself. So you can start asking those questions. And that learning target use is really giving us that guide, and we're adding in that success criteria. So we know both the teacher and the student, this is where we're headed, and the success criteria are letting you know this is what it looks like when we get there. This is what we're making, saying, doing, and writing to kind of go, oh, that's the observable action to know that I'm actually reaching that target. And then we get to what does the student understand now? Well, that's when we're starting to elicit evidence. Well, this is continual during the learning process. This is what I'm seeing, what I'm hearing, of what the students are doing. So for example, in social studies, we had the kids in history, whether it was world or US, analyzing a lot of primary documents. And they would be talking to each other, and I would be listening to going, okay, what questions are they asking each other? What are they wondering themselves? What are the questions they're asking me? I'm listening to see, are things going well as far as the content, the skill development, and even just the procedures? And it got to the point where the kids became very comfortable to not only ask each other, but also to ask me and go, wait a minute, we're not understanding this part. Or to the point where they might go, could we try it this way? And I, as a teacher, could pause them and go, okay, wait a minute, either this is something I need to direct with that particular individual or that small group or maybe the whole class and make those real-time adjustments, which leads us to how do we get to that learning target, that formative feedback and instructional learning decisions. Well, if I'm constantly observing what's happening in my classroom and looking at what the kids are saying and doing and what while they're making, doing, and creating things, I can make those real-time adjustments and give them that kind of feedback. And if I model that really well with the students, and yeah, sometimes you have to give them sentence starters or you have to give them, like when they were first learning this is even with the high school kids, I would give them some different phrases they could use with each other because we have to still teach them how to be human. And the kids started to be able to give each other effective feedback. And then we'd also teach the kids how to do self-reflection. So all of a sudden, they're getting feedback not only from me, but from their classmates, as well as their own, and developing their own skill and their own resources to be self-reflective. And then we take all of that evidence, all those opportunities, to start to make those instructional learning decisions. Notice when we say instructional, we're talking about the teachers. And when we're saying learning decisions, we're talking about the students. So one of the important things of doing this in class is giving the kids time to process and to reflect and to create a plan of action. This is where I am right now. This is my next step to get us ready. And as a teacher, I'm looking at it going, do we need a little bit more time with this or can we move on to the next step? And I can make those decisions. So another way of thinking about this is using formative assessment like a GPS system. Margaret Heritage is one of the national experts that we work with, and she said, students drive, teachers guide. Students should be doing 90% of the work of learning during the lesson. And if you were in Christy's session a moment ago, whoever's doing the doing is doing the learning. And so in this case, with this GPS system, think about it. stage one, where are we going? That's that planning and learning targets. That's where we want to end up. What does the student understand now? We might have students in all different phases of that learning journey. And what do we do with kids who might be going into that dead end? And how do we get there to that learning target? Well, we start help giving them that feedback, recalculating, to make sure that they can get back on track. So why is formative assessment foundational in teaching and learning?
Before we get to that, if you want to take just a second, and how does what Mary Helen shared with you about what we mean by formative assessment process resonate with what you currently think about formative assessment process? Because if this is the first you're hearing about this, you might be thinking about how companies will sell you books of formative assessments, or you might have a formative assessment suite or formative assessment tools, and that's very different than what Mary Helen was just talking about. So if you have other people here or you want to talk with someone else who's here, even if you don't know them, just take a second to reflect on where is your thinking about formative assessment process now compared to when you first came in the room. All right. So, thank you. All right, so why? Mary Helen said we would talk about the what. What is it? And now we're going to talk about why. Why do it? And this first why is pretty astounding. And the information is old, and it's only improved. But there was a huge meta-analysis done where they synthesized over more than 4,000 research studies in the last 40 years, and now it would probably be the last 60 years because it's probably about 20 years old. I don't know if any of you have read Inside the Black Box by Dylan Willum, but I would say it's still very relevant. I know I revisit it with some of my FAME teams throughout the year, but when they did this meta-analysis, these five reviews, the conclusion was clear. And more recent research tells us now that it's probably close to triple the speed. I was just reading an article by Dylan Willum last night, and I'm not going to lie, I fell asleep while I was reading it, so I didn't finish it. But he talks about how people can criticize today's schools, and people can criticize what we're doing, and that we don't have students performing to the level we should have students performing at, and students don't care, and teachers are just going through the motions. But what he's saying, and this was even in 2006, so this was even 20 years ago when he was making this address to a group of teachers in London, he talked about how we are preparing students for things that they didn't prepare students for 50 years ago. 50 years ago, you didn't have to do much more than be able to read and write, if you even had to be able to read and write to perform your job. And now, if that's all you can do is basic reading and writing, probably a robot, AI, a computer is going to take over your job. We're having to prepare kids for things that they didn't have to 50 years ago. So we should give ourselves a pat on the back. But what he's saying is that we can't wait until we get to the end assessment 6 weeks down the road to realize the kids didn't get it when we were teaching it. We can't wait to figure out who learned this and who didn't until the summative assessment weeks down the road. We need to, he makes the argument that if you walk into class tomorrow not knowing what your students knew yesterday, not knowing what they learned and exactly where they're at, you're behind the eight ball and you almost can't catch up. You have to know in the moment. I was at a session yesterday with a group that's working on standards-based grading, and part of their process is that they no longer give makeup work or homework because the teachers need to know while the students are in class what students can do. And any evidence they get that students are learning that learning target or that standard, they're able to put that into the gradebook. They want 5 pieces of evidence for every standard that's on their standards-based report card, and they can do that just through observation. You don't have 2 weeks to correct papers from students to tell them whether or not they're learning. I was with a teacher one time, and she was complaining. She's like, I have these papers that have been in my bag for 2 weeks. I'm so tired of carrying them around. I got to carve out 8 hours to go through them and give feedback. I was like, why would you give feedback now? That was 2 weeks ago. Don't you hope they're someplace different now than they were 2 weeks ago? And honestly, if you're giving feedback on something that you're taking a grade on, the kids are not redoing it. It wasn't about learning, it was about earning. And whatever it was, is whatever grade you're going to give them, it's not worth them to redo it for the most part, right? So we have to be checking in with kids during the learning process. And that's what formative assessment is all about. We want to create self-directed learners where they have opportunities to engage in authentic experiences in the classroom. I would make the argument that you could get more information about student learning by teaching from your feet and not from your seat, by walking around, listening to them interact, watching them as they make, say, do, and write. Listen to them as they talk to one another. Listen to them as they use that vocabulary, as they ask each other questions that give you indications about what they're learning and understanding. That's real world. Dialogic learning, that's real world. Solving problems together, collaborating, that's real world. So the research tells us, this quote right here, that formative assessment promotes the goals of lifelong learning. We are creating dependent learners to wait for a teacher to teach them. They're going to stop learning as soon as they leave our classroom. We can't afford that. We need them to have improved learning skills so that they can be curious about the world around them. I'm leading a session at our formative assessment building understanding series in a couple of weeks about students asking questions and some of the research I did on that, because there's not a ton of research out there about students asking questions, students getting to share what they're curious about. And part of the reason that it's so important for students to be able to ask questions is because we have to build a micro democracy where students can ask questions in order to be able to advocate for their own needs. And this whole movement started this, I'm not sure if you're familiar with the question, the QTF, the question formation, or QFT, the question formation technique. But what it started with was a group of social workers who were working with parents who had students who were in an alternative education program. And it's not at all that the parents didn't care about their kids. They cared deeply about their kids. They didn't want to see their kids fail. They didn't want to see their kids not earn a diploma. But they were not connected to the school in any way because they said to these social workers, I don't even know what to ask. I don't know how to go in there and advocate for my kid. I don't even know the right questions to ask. I'm going to look like an idiot. So these social workers were like, we'll give you the questions to ask. But what they found is that the questions were so unique to each student that they really needed the skills to be able to ask questions to advocate on behalf of their students. So what we find is that students don't know how to navigate social systems when they don't know how to ask questions. They don't know how to be curious. They don't know what they don't know. They don't even know where to start. So what we need to do is to build these learning skills in students, to create that need for learning, to create that need to get information so that they can be more self-directed and make decisions for themselves, creating that micro-democracy for them. So this was what the research says, and what I'm going to show you on the next slide is what one of our FAME coaches said in survey. So if you decide to join the FAME program, I just want to tell you right now that we ask you to fill out a survey a couple of times a year, and I swear to you, we spend hours going over your survey results. They do not go in the bin. I can't even believe the number of hours we spend reading the survey results. So this is what one of the coaches said. Can you imagine the power, and maybe you already experienced this, I will tell you that pre-formative assessment, I didn't experience this, students understanding what they're supposed to learn, not what they're supposed to do, not that they have to get pages 35 through 39 done and answer the questions at the end of the chapter, but they can tell you what they're supposed to learn. And now, as a result of being on these FAME teams, this teacher is learning about how they can tell what their students are thinking by listening to them and able to make adjustments to learning and instruction in the moment, not waiting until tomorrow, not waiting until next week, This is what our coaches are saying. Here's what the research says. There's changes in the classroom. Students are setting goals, varied instructional practices, because we have some clarity around what students are supposed to be learning. And now we have that creativity to think about, how do we get students engaged in this, get excited about this? And here's what our coaches said. Students want this kind of opportunity. Mary Helen talked about Tim. Students want that opportunity to be successful and to see themselves in what it is that they're learning. Here's what the research says. That first slide that I showed you that's so impactful, it'll double the speed of learning, and now saying triple the speed of learning, that is for our most struggling learners. Those are the ones that can sit in the back of the classroom and who aren't causing trouble, so they get overlooked. And that we don't realize they didn't learn it until we get their assessment results back, right? Those are the students we can triple, double and triple the speed of learning. And then here's what one of our coaches said. My background is in special education, and I 100% agree. When we have that clarity, when we hold students to high standards, we can absolutely personalize their learning, adjust for what they need, and still hold them to high standards. And we can wait, not for them to fail, but just for them to respond, to make instructional learning decisions for them. All right, so that is the why. Hopefully that's pretty compelling to you about what a difference it can make in your classroom. I'm going to talk a little bit about the how, and then we're going to give you a chance to kind of debrief again about the how, and then Mary Helen's going to wrap things up by talking about some actual classroom examples. So how do we make this work? And I'm not going to talk too long about this because Mary Helen already talked a lot into this when she showed you those FAME graphics. But the process of getting together with your FAME teams, and I didn't want to scare you at the beginning. I thought about what I was going to say about my FAME teams, and then I decided not to, but now I've changed my mind again. I have five teams. I meet with the preschool team, and they are able to meet during their school day. The rest of my teams don't meet during the school day because there's just not time. They don't have common planning. So I have one team that meets at 6 in the morning because they want to coach, and I have teams that meet after school. But what we get together to do is we get together and we learn about these components and elements in isolation and then recognize they can't work in isolation. Just like Mary Helen was talking about the volleyball team that she coached and the teams that she played on, they had to learn those skills in isolation then to put them together to be able to play the game. So that's why this is a three-year process. If you look at the things that Mary Helen handed out to you earlier, it takes 3 years because it takes time. We need to meet teachers where they are. Just like we get the students we get, not the students we wish we had. We get the students we get. We have the teachers we have, not the students, not the teachers we wish we had, not the teachers who have all the skills we wish they had, but we meet them where they are. So these are the things we learn about. We learn about knowing and sharing learning targets and how we can help students to know what are the observable characteristics of learning we're looking for, not only so that we as teachers can evaluate them, much less that, than it is so that students can self-assess, where students can determine what it is that they're doing well, where they are in the learning right now and where they need to go next. And students can use this success criteria, this observable manifestation of what learning looks like, very specific to the learning target, so they can give feedback to one another. So, so critical. It took me about 10 years to figure that out. I'm giving you a little insight. So we can plan for meaningful opportunities because the person doing the doing is the person doing the learning. We can make the argument that 90% of what happens in the classroom should be student-led, students doing the learning. There has to be something for them to do something with. There has to be teaching. We're not saying teachers don't belong here. There still needs to be explicit instruction at times. There still needs to be very rich learning opportunities because students don't have anything to talk about, won't have anything to talk about, right? You've got to give them those things to get excited about. You've got to give them things to notice. You've got to show them videos. You've got to activate their background knowledge. You've got to bring in their own experiences. And then you need to give them time to do something with it, to build off from where they are. So we provide students with opportunities to use feedback. One of the biggest things we believe is that the recipient of the feedback is the owner of the feedback. There's a great video on our website where there's a student talking about how so-and-so said that they need to you know, they got feedback from their peer that they need to change their thesis statement because da-da-da-da-da, and they're like, I don't want to change my thesis statement. That is what I believe about this, but what I need to do is I need to fix some of my evidence because it's not supporting my thesis statement if that's what they got from this. So we talk about how you are the recipient and the owner of that feedback, and you choose what to do with it. But we want to have really quality opportunities to get feedback. That is not evaluation, but feedback. Using that evidence to continuously adjust the instruction and helping students to set goals. And I put this protocol up here, this WHOOP protocol. It's something that I've used with teachers because I work more with teachers than I do with students. But it's this idea of helping students to make that wish. And my guess is that wish is pretty aligned with some of that success criteria. What do you want to be able to do? What I want to do is come up with a quality thesis statement. Okay, what are the observable, that second O, the observable objectives of creating a quality thesis statement? Can they tell you what does a quality thesis statement have? Those are the objectives. Well, now I've got obstacles, that second O. What are the obstacles I'm going to encounter? Well, one obstacle I'm going to encounter is that I struggle to read. So it's going to be really hard for me to be able to read this in its entirety, or I struggle to focus. So I'm not going to be able to read this entire piece of text at one time. And then the P is the plan that students come up with. Okay, when I encounter a text that's too hard for me to read, I'm going to make sure that I put on my headphones and I listen to it. Okay, when I start to lose focus, I'm going to start asking myself metacognition questions. In fact, I'm going to check in with myself every two paragraphs to make sure I'm understanding. That's the plan they're coming up with. These are the things we want students to do. Something like this WHOOP protocol. How do I get closer to meeting that wish? The formative data that we are collecting, it's everything students say, do, make, and write. We have to be teaching from our feet, not from our seat. I want to know exactly where students are before they leave that classroom. I want to hear them interacting. I want to watch them putting things on their whiteboard. I want to watch them problem solve and think through. I want to ask them deeper level questions. And I want to listen, not for correctness, but for where their thinking is. I want to shift from wrong to why to how. How did you get that answer? What evidence supports that? Why do you think that? And I don't only want to ask that when they're wrong. I want to be asking that all the time because that informs me as the teacher. That gives me the evidence I need to be making instructional decisions. And then we've got that feedback. I don't have no idea why it came in on the slide like that. But in order to give feedback, you have to have that clear idea of what's it going to look like. And the students have to understand that in the same way or the feedback is not meaningful. We need students to see what they're doing and where they are in relation to the learning target. And we need to engage them in thinking, not about what grade would you give yourself, but how do you know you're learning? How would you prove to me as the teacher you're learning? So now another opportunity before Mary Helen shows you some examples of real life classrooms that are doing this work. Take a second just to reflect with someone else in the room. How does the why compel you? What more evidence might you need to get teachers on board with doing this? And what are you thinking about the how? How this might look, why it might take 3 years to get through all these components and elements? Just share where your thinking is now that you've learned a little bit more about.
All right, so you may have questions. If you have any burning questions right now, we're more than welcome to answer anything that you might have. Or I'm going to continue on with the classroom examples, and we'll still have time for you to ask questions. Nothing burning, okay. So this first one's an economics example. In the learning target, I'm learning how producers and consumers use demand, supply, and equilibrium price to make decisions. I know that in the state of Michigan, a lot of districts for several years have been using like the ICANN statements, which might very well work for you. But what we were realizing is that a lot of the teachers and the students were getting confused with going, what's the difference between a learning target and success criteria? So we switched the language a little bit. And when I switched it to I am learning to be the learning target and the ICANN statement to be the success criteria, it was like a light bulb went off for both my colleagues as well as for my students. And so this is something where we're trying to look at the target. Like Christy did a brilliant presentation just a moment ago about learning targets, so I kind of feel like I'm behind the ball. But With the success criteria, these were the actionable steps of when the students would know when they actually hit that target. And this was something that I very much embedded it within my lesson all the time, so the kids were very used to it. It became part of our vernacular, it became part of our process, it became just our value system of how we learned. So in this first part up here was essentially the directives. These were the scenarios that the students had to figure out. And, you know, they're trying to figure out, you know, what's happening with supply and demand, and ultimately, based on this scenario, how would producers and consumers respond? And down here was the explanation that the students would give based on this scenario and what they knew and how they would set up this graph. And so they had to know things like what is demand, what is supply, what's the equilibrium price, and based on this scenario, what would happen in this case to supply, and what does that do for the equilibrium price? And based on that evidence, this is what the consumers and the producers would do. This is how they would respond. This was something where, you know, the technology, I used Pear Deck, and I did this with both virtual and in-person students. And in this case, here's my point that I really want you to take away. If you understand the principles of formative assessment and you can do it with fidelity, they can be applied in any context, whether it's in person or virtual. And I've done it in both. And it's one of those things where this tool, this technology tool, helped me get immediate evidence from my students so I could see the whole class immediately, whether they were understanding the concepts or what might be some areas that they weren't understanding. And then there were a few different ways of how we could approach this. If they all really messed up, like I could go, okay, well, let's take a look at this. Or we could break it down as together as a class. And we could have kids fix their what was going on and make those corrections so that they would understand the process of it, so that they would know how to prepare themselves for that summative piece. And I also gave them many other opportunities to practice with the content and the skill set before we actually got to the summative piece. And so there are times where, yeah, we had different study packets and the whiteboards and the human graphs where kids were actually lined up and in teams. And if you put any tape on your floors, use painter's tape. Custodians will appreciate you. I had just many different opportunities for the kids to actually practice this, because even if they're juniors or seniors, supply and demand is a tricky, tricky thing. And yet, they were starting to really understand these high content, like this, the complexity of these economic concepts. Another example, this is from CTE, where this teacher realized that a lot of his students were lining up, waiting for him to be able to answer one of their questions to see what their next steps were and if they were okay, like to move on. And he realized that his kids lining up to just talk to him, they were spending more time standing in line than actually doing the learning. And so he was like, oh, this isn't working, what do I do? So he came up and said, well, here are four models of proficiency for this particular product. And it would direct the kids going, look, you have the learning target, you have the success criteria, look at the models of proficiency and see where you are in your process. And if you still have questions, then come talk to me. And what he started to realize is that the kids started taking the ownership of going up and checking their own work, going, oh, wait a minute, I'm missing a step here, and going back and fixing their product. And all of a sudden, he also realized that the kids started talking to each other, going, well, wait a minute, dude, you got to check that model, because... And all of a sudden, no one's waiting in line, and it was the kids were still using him as a resource, but they were doing more learning than waiting to talk with someone. And so this was something where it's building that student ownership. Another example, this was something where, you know, how do you help a second grader be independent in her classroom? This second grader had was strongly visual impairments as well as modality, small motor issues. And the issue was she wanted to be more independent in her second grade classroom. And she had an e-reader, but at the time she had to have an adult or someone else use the e-reader for her to go to the next step. And so it was, and it also had an issue with her visual impairment. So what happened was the teachers of these seniors were telling them, here's our problem. This is what the student's issue is. And we challenge you to see if you can come up with a product that could help her be more independent. And one of the things, first of all, they had to kind of develop that. These were engineering students, the disciplinary knowledge of what was going on. And they also had to think and act like an engineer. And these instructors were telling these kids, like they brought in the OT, they brought in some of the second grader support personnel to talk with these seniors in high school, going, like they actually gave them the visual goggles so they could see what she would see. And these seniors went, oh my gosh, she can't, like it's her visual impairment's really, really hard. Like we really have, like all of a sudden when they started to realize the difficulties and challenges this second grader was dealing with, then they were all in. We were like, we have to find a product that's gonna help this kid. Now all of a sudden it was a value system for them because now this is real life. We're impacting someone's life and we better come up with something to help this kid. And so all of a sudden the seniors had a little bit of practice from their instructors of going, you know, what this is how you need to talk with a second grader. These are all senior boys, they're huge, talking to a second grade girl. These are some things of the procedural knowledge and what's going on. So here's the picture of the second grade girl. This is their first visit, where they're asking her about her experience. And they're asking her what her wishes are. And they're having this dialogue of what might help. And they started to realize that they started to do these prototypes. And the first prototype, the boys were like, oh, we nailed it. We got this. And within the first 25 seconds, the little girl was like, nope, doesn't work. And the boys were totally just crushed. And yet, the instructors sat with the boys and went, okay, let's debrief. What might be some of the things that were some of the issues and what might be some of the ways that you could fix this? And so they had that time to process and reflect. And it actually helped build that resilience in the boys. They're like, yeah, we failed, but we get another chance at this. And let's learn from our mistake. And so they went, okay, and they went back and we got to think about maybe looking at her table and how we can make an adjustable table for her. And maybe we need to look at how we can change this so that she can actually use her hand to mobilize this in a little bit of a better area. And all of a sudden they came up with this product that actually helped this little girl navigate her e-reader on her own and be able to use it in a way where she could be more independent. And with this, for the CTA, in this particular program, you know, they have the empathy in which these seniors went, we understand this person needs some help, and how can we help her live her best life? Defining what the issue was, trying to figure out a better e-reader that she could use and not have to wait, be dependent on someone else, to ideate their different ideas, that look at their prototypes, get the feedback not only from their instructors, but also from the actual client, and to be able to reflect on this. Well, the reality is this is what it looks like in real time. It was all over the place, right? It wasn't this easy system. So in this, these boys, during each of their different ideations of these prototypes, after talking with the second grader, they would also go back with their teams, and their instructors are here as well, kind of talking through their process and figuring out what they might need to do to make something that's actually viable for a second grader to actually use. So these assessment practices were embedded in day-to-day. It was continual. So when we're looking at this, for this particular part, they're looking at to develop those critical thinking skills while mastering the content at a deeper level. They're embracing that risk-taking to try to actually solve those problems. And they had to collaborate and to communicate and to think about how do we become more of these system, like solution thinkers, and how do we start to develop this empathy for those around us so that we can actually make viable solutions to lift everyone up. So what I'd like you to do for a moment is to stand up, hands up, and pair up, is talk with a partner and think about what connections to the formative assessment process are you seeing in your classroom or in your context. So whether it's in your own personal classroom or maybe some of the educators you're supporting. So if you do me a favor, stand up, hands up, pair up, and talk with someone. Please thank your partner and then have a seat. So he is. So he's totally my boss, and I'm totally telling him that. And he'll love it. He'll be like, I'm so sorry. Should have knocked on the wall. Go higher. All right. So how fame can support you. All right. So looking at Sims, et cetera, the meta-analysis. So effective professional learning motivates teachers to make changes in their practice and provides insight about teaching and learning. Provides techniques for putting these insights to work and embed change in the practice. And this is one of those things where we have a 3-year program because we know it takes time. And I know people want results immediately, but if we could do that, then we wouldn't be in this situation in the first place. So we need teachers to have that opportunity to make these incremental changes and to change the culture and the climate within their learning settings. And also to get the kids to envelop in that. Now, in my personal experience, I had a lot of kids who, quite honestly, my students and my parents and guardians were like, why doesn't everybody do this? I'm like, well, we're trying, but they made the difference. They saw the difference. I had one colleague who I taught his daughter, and his daughter is, I'm going off script for a minute, so he'd really keep me on time. So his daughter was moved from her home school and came to our school. And she was in my econ class. And she had had a lot of challenges in education to the point where she didn't even really want to go to school. So this was a big thing. And I only had her for a semester. It is econ. Like, who would love econ? I don't know. But apparently it was fun. They liked it. And it was one of those things where he came across the hall and was like, what are you doing and how do I do it? Because my daughter loves school and loves your class. And I don't know what just happened. And so, fortunately, I knew him well. We had known each other for a long time. And I went, well, I'm going to meet him where he is. I went, let's start where you are. What do you have? Because at first, it could seem really overwhelming to go, oh, my gosh, I just have to totally rehaul everything that I'm doing. Let's see where you are, and let's start making some incremental changes. And these are some of the things that you can focus on. And all of a sudden, he had the government kids, I had the econ kids. So all of a sudden, it started to happen where we would switch kids at the semester. And he was like, oh, it's so great getting your kids because they already know the formative assessment. They already know what to do. I went, yeah, imagine if this happened all the time and you didn't have to retrain them on how to do this. And if everybody was doing it, how much easier this would be. He was like, they're so self-motivated. I went, yes, this is what we're talking about. And so it's one of those things where as professionals, we have to meet our colleagues where they are. And we have to support them how we might. So one of our mission is to working collaboratively, educators will learn, implement, and reflect on the formative assessment process to guide student learning and teachers' instructional practices. We have now expanded to have pre-K teams all the way to the higher ed teams, the higher education. We're working with Grand Valley State University with 3 of their professors and helping them develop it within their pre-service classrooms and everyone in between. And we've been working with classroom teachers, and we've been working with administrators and people at the ISD, at the regional level with our ISDs and our and RESAs, to help build their teams wherever they might be. The FAME origins, I'm not going to get too much into this, but back in 2008, Ed Reber, who was working at MDE at the time, brought in Kim Young, who was also working at MDE at the time. We're really trying to figure out how do we reach these high school students who are low achievers. And it ended up that, yes, the FAME program, like when they went into the research, they were like, honestly, the thing that's going to really kind of pull this, elevate students, is this formative assessment process. And so they looked at it and went, well, what are the top 10 and 10 year strategic education plan? And noticed that the FAME program really hits some of those really key, three of those key strategies. And they began at the ISD level. It's voluntary, but it started to spread across the state. And all of a sudden they started realizing this isn't just for the low achievers, this really is for everybody. And so we started to evolve. So the program itself, it's funded by the Michigan Department of Education, and we have a contract for the next 8 years. That's one of the big questions people have. Do we have the funding for it? And our funding pays for all of your training and all the resources. So if you come to one of our trainings, whether they're if they're in person, you'll get a continental breakfast as well as a lunch. All of your registration fees, all the material fees, the presenter fees are already paid for. You just need to get yourself to the actual training, and if you need a substitute, talk with your district. But we can cover everything else. So we have what's called new coach welcome webinars that are in the spring. They're going to happen this May. And part of that is to help orient you to those different like resources that are available for you. And then we're going to actually change this a little bit. I have to alter this because we changed this Launch No Learning Part 2, and we're now going to call it a coach orientation, and we're going to move this in the fall just before that Launch Into Learning so that the coaches have those resources and have kind of what's our next step, how do we plan this for our learning teams, and then you take your learning team to either a six-hour in-person or a three-hour virtual session. And we try to offer varieties because we know that all of you have really busy schedules, and we're trying to give you as many opportunities for you to access our resources as possible. And in the first year, we also strongly recommend that our coaches go to the Adaptive Schools training. Three of our FAME leads are Thinking Collaborative Trainers, Christy being one of them, to train people in both Adaptive Schools and Cognitive Coaching. Adaptive Schools is looking at more of the systems, how to implement and build and scale up systems. Cognitive coaching is more of the individual, how do we talk with individuals to help develop their resources and elevate their thinking. As well as there's other optional trainings that are available to both your learning team members as well as you. In years 2 and 3, we ask, you know, we invite the returning coaches to come back to a virtual webinar in the spring to give them the updates. So for example, in the past 2 years, we kind of altered to help people build capacity. We said, well, rather than just the coaches going to these adaptive school trainings or cognitive coaching trainings, bring two people, whether it's an administrator and or a team member, to these trainings as well, so you start to build capacity within your organization. And so all of a sudden, you now have a thought partner as you're learning this, and now you're starting to build that support. So that was an update that we needed to tell our returning coaches so they knew to actually invite their colleagues and to register them. And again, there's always these different tools and resources. We have Tara Kintz, who's you know, leading this research and evaluation and development team, who's created many of these amazing resources with us today. So thank you, Tara. She's also was our interim program manager prior to me. 1 minute. Oh, God, I got to go. Okay. So learning teams. So we want to empower our students. We want to support our teachers. We want to build a shared understanding and capacity in the department, school, whatever your organization is. We know that teachers need time. We know that we need to develop that trust within our learning team so that people are willing to receive that information and then take action on it. And we need people to have the courage and the bravery to explore and to experiment and to excel in developing these new skills. So this is one of the things that, from research, students in classes of teachers who participate in a professional development program on formative assessment outperform students in a control group of teachers who didn't. From a FAME coach, I think that the formative assessment process is one of the most powerful things I've witnessed as an educator. So if nothing else, let that marinate. Take a quick moment. And what I'd like you to do is either to think about or write down, ideally write down, three important points that you heard from today, something that squares with your beliefs and your practices, and maybe something that's still circling around your head you're not so sure about. Take a moment and give yourself a chance to process that. Finish your thought. So what might be some questions for us? Ask us anything, and if we don't know it, we'll give it to Tara. Someone who is invested in learning and who's willing to be a cheerleader for kids and for teachers. So in my experience, I was a FAME coach, and I got a lot of street cred, and I had a lot of really good rapport with a lot of my colleagues. And so they were like, well, if Mary Helen thinks this is good, I'm willing to try it. And one of the first questions I had, this was my best team. There were a bunch of veteran teachers, and there was my student teacher was also on my team. And at the time, my central office people were very, very supportive of this program. And the first question my veteran teacher said was, do we have support from central office? And at the time, I could say yes. And they're like, all right, I'm in. A few years later, we had all disbanded into different buildings, and we all kind of came back together, and that same group of teachers went, we miss our FAME team. That was the best professional development we ever had. That was our best learning community we ever had. And they missed it. And these are some of the top teachers who, we all met on a Friday. I made sure there was healthy treats, water, and chocolate. And it was one of those things, like, you gotta keep people fed and watered. And we did a ton of work together. And we would even, it was something where, like, I would give up my planning hour to either go observe someone or take someone else's class so they could go observe someone else on the team. And we would give each other feedback and get ideas from each other. Like, what really worked and how did you get that to happen? And even though we had maybe different content, because we were social studies ELA, we were all teaching different stuff, there was definitely a wealth of information we could get from each other. So at the same time, we're also dealing with a lot of other people who, it's their administrators who are starting off to learn this and then bring in their teachers. And then we also have FAME coaches who are at the ISD level who are trying to figure out how can we help the schools that we service. So I'm not really giving you a directive of who would be the best person. It's going to be someone who is passionate about helping teachers and kids and who's a change agent. Yes. Thank you so much.